The USA is the home of serial killers. A killer is defined as serial when they have killed three or more people in various attacks. Of the prolific serial killers known around the world, 74% were born and raised in the USA.
Welcome back, everybody, to Murder with Mo, the true crime podcast that covers serial killer cases in the USA. I'm your host, Mo, and I'm on the case today. Trigger warning, today's episode does talk of sexual assault and harm to minors, so make sure you listen with care. The sources for today's case are thedailybreeze.com, serialkillercalendar.com, and allthat'sinteresting.com. So everybody take a second, close your eyes, and imagine it's a beautiful sunny day. You're driving down the street and your favorite song comes on the radio. While you're singing and dancing, having a great time, you notice that there's something odd on the side of the road. As you get closer, you comprehend that this object's actually a trash bag, but it was oddly shaped due to whatever contents were inside of it. Being the good Samaritan that you are, you decide, okay, let me pick up this trash to avoid any type of litter or garbage on the road. Now, while you're in the process of lifting the bag, a human body part falls out and your jaw drops. You have just discovered a murdered body, and that means there's a killer on the loose. Now, this reality was all too real for the people of the Los Angeles County in between 1962 and 1977. So in the 1960s and 70s, hitchhiking was a very normalized thing. You'd be driving down highways, roads, or city streets and see someone trying to pick up a ride from anybody that was headed in the same direction as them. Now, while most had pure intentions with lending a helping hand and giving people rides that they needed, others saw hitchhiking individuals as a perfect ruse to lure them into their car and commit heinous crimes against them. It was a serial killer's most treasured playground. One afternoon, a 19-year-old Caucasian male who has never been identified by authorities, everybody, was hitchhiking and needed a ride to Los Angeles from Orange County. An average man looking to be the same age as the hitchhiker pulled his motorcycle to the side of the road and offered this young man a ride. Looking unsuspecting of any malice, the hitchhiker took the ride, but little did he know it would be the last ride he would ever take, and he would become the first victim of the trash bag killer. He was taken to a secluded area where the driver shot him in the head and they committed necrophilia on the body. Realizing there was a witness that actually saw this strange man as the last person to be with the hitchhiker he just killed, he went back to where he picked the hitchhiker up from and murdered this witness as well. Now, there was a break in the murders. After the 1962 slayings of the hitchhikers, 6 years would actually go by until another person went missing. In 1968, a man known as George disappeared from the San Diego nightlife. Witnesses stated that George was smooth-talked, if you will, into a vehicle with a man that they didn't recognize because he didn't actually frequent the area. Authorities didn't have too much to go on, so the missing persons case went cold. There were two more disappearances that took place between 1968 and 73. They were John Demchick, who was only 13 years old, and James Fletcher Barwick, only 17 years old. Naturally, because so much time is passing between the disappearances, police forces couldn't even fathom connecting the disappearances to one another. Mostly, they attributed it to potential runaways, and to add on to that, there were no bodies turning up. So they were furthest away from the idea that these disappearances are actually kidnappings turned into brutal murders, you know? That is, though, until 1974, when a sudden plethora of young men started to go missing, that they realized, okay, something's really not right. And then bodies started to turn up, everybody. So that's when they realized, okay, yeah, we have a serial killer on the loose. We got to do something about this. In 1974, this mysterious killer began evolving in his tactics. Refining them made it possible for him to kill more efficiently and effectively. In August 1974, a 5-year-old boy went missing from the Lenox, California area, and his body was found just 2 months later, and his cause of death was suffocation. Then, 6 months later, on April 13th of 1975, a body of somebody who was already filed as a missing person was discovered. It was Albert Rivera, who was shot in the head, sodomized, and dismembered. His remains were disposed in various places across major highways in California. From April 1975 to February 1977, 15 young men were discovered, most of which had been shot in the head, dismembered, sodomized post-mortem, disemboweled, and left in trash bags across various highways. Do y'all know how hard it is to disembowel somebody? So at this point, now authorities are able to connect some deeply disturbing details and realize that, okay, this is one person. March 13th, 1977, nearly a month after the most recent body of this killing spree was found, a 17-year-old boy named John LeMay went missing. The day of his disappearance, he chatted with a few of his neighbors and told them his plans for the day. He specified he was going to Redondo Beach to visit with a man named Dave that he met earlier in the week. Now, this didn't really seem unusual to the neighbors, so they didn't ask too many more questions about it. And when the conversation was over, John went on his way to meet up with Dave. But as the day turned into night and there was absolutely no communication or sign of John coming home when he should have been, the El Segundo police were called. The detectives on this case interviewed the neighbors that had last spoken with John and got the name Dave as potentially being the last person seen with him. Detectives were able to sift through potential Daves in the area and found the exact person that they were searching for, David Hill. So after finding the potential last person to see John alive, detectives decide, you know, let's take a second and dive deeper into this person. Let's go look at his background before bringing him in to talk and get more information. They find out that David Hill was really just your average married middle-aged man. I mean, he worked a steady job to pay his bills and lived in the Los Angeles area. He owned a home and shared it with his husband, Patrick Kearney. Now, initially, when investigators interviewed Hill and Kearney, they weren't suspicious of them having anything to do with John's disappearance. They figured foul play must have come over John sometime before he would have been able to make it to their house, as they claimed that they never saw him that day. Now, that was until about a month later when John LeMaine's remains were discovered wrapped in plastic bags in an 80-gallon can in the Temescal Canyon. El Segundo Police Detective Roger Cow noted that there were similarities between LeMaine's death and the deaths of numerous other victims, all young men whose nude bodies had been found near highways in four Southern California counties since April 1975. So with this newfound revelation, detectives quickly decide they need to get Hill and Kearney back to their station for further questioning, as they suspect one of or both of them have something to do and are the serial killer that they've been looking for since 1975. Now, warrants were issued for the arrest of Kearney and Hill on June 3rd, but before authorities could detain them, Kearney and Hill resigned from their jobs, packed their bags, and fled off to El Paso, Texas to avoid arrest. Evading police detection for an entire month, the two fugitives' families begged them to end this cat and mouse game they were playing with authorities, and both of them families told them the best thing that there is to do is to come back to California and turn yourselves in. This isn't going to stop until you do that. So on July 1st, 1977, both Kearney and Hill returned to Riverside County and turned themselves into the Sheriff's Department. Both were charged with the murder of John LeMay. Now, detectives separated the two, and they were hit with a slew of more charges. While the couple were on the run, the investigators got a head start in putting together a strong case that connected the murder of John LeMay with the other unsolved killings slash disposal of young men over the years. So while in custody, David Hill was flabbergasted, maintaining that his innocence should not be questioned. He never hurt anybody. He had no clue what detectives were talking about, but it was really hard to believe what was coming out of his mouth because, I mean, he went on the run literally to Texas when arrest warrants were issued or when they wanted to bring him back in. I mean, the evidence was pointing to him from every which way for not only John LeMay's murders, but the plethora of other murders. So, I mean, like I say, why would you run if you're not guilty? That doesn't help your case at all. The conversations, though, that detectives were having with Patrick Kearney, however, had a completely different vibe than David Hill's. When detectives were making him known that the growing evidence against him and Hill was overwhelming to overlook, Patrick Kearney does the unthinkable and actually shocks the detectives in the room. This was him confessing to the murder of John LeMay and the other immediate charges that he was facing. Now, Kearney and his attorneys reached a plea deal with the prosecutors of this case, and the prosecutors assured Kearney that they would not pursue the death penalty in exchange for both his confession for every murder he committed and a guilty plea on whatever charges that they come up against him. While Hill was thought to be an accomplice or the main suspect of these murders, during the course of Patrick Kearney's confession to the slew of murders, David Hill was actually released and all charges against him were dropped. I'm glad that, you know, at least he came out and was honest so that his husband didn't have to face the consequences for his literal actions. But in Kearney's written confession, he claimed the responsibility for the murders of 21 young men and an additional seven more. His confessions were very detailed about the murders committed and documented the reasonings behind almost every single kill. Kearney explained in his confessions where the urges to murder people began. He stated that he was often bullied and beat up in school for being queer. And following the constant berating, he started to harbor fantasies of killing personal enemies and skinning them alive. So over the years, his fantasies of harming his enemies turned into insatiable urges to want to murder them. And he couldn't shake the growing thoughts of wanting to kill, to the point of which he couldn't control the thoughts any longer and he needed to act on them. So in his confession, there were moments of him confessing of the details in too much gore. So again, listen with care as this is coming up. So he spoke on the murder of the hitchhiker and the witness in 1962. And he also did go on to mention that he claimed several more lives of victims between 1962 and 1966. But the murders came to an abrupt stop because at that point in his life, Patrick had met David Hill. And shortly after meeting, the two moved in with each other to start their lives together. Now, this was filling in a lot of gaps for detectives because they were puzzled as to why the disappearances and murders of the young man had taken a turn from being consistent to sporadic, then going back to consistent, then stopping for a little bit, then coming back again. So according to Kearney's confession, his need to kill would be sparked when he and David would argue. The more often the arguments, the more often he would go out and search for people to kill. Now, understanding where this all started, the detectives were looking to further gain knowledge about how he was killing, where the bodies were, and the names of every single victim. So Kearney went into detail of one of his earliest killings, George. He picked up George from the San Diego nightlife and convinced him to come to his house with him. Now, once George was comfortable enough and actually fell asleep on the couch, Kearney shot him in the temple while he was sleeping and then dumped his body into the bathtub and sodomized him post-mortem. Now, his body was found with the directions Kearney left in his confession on where he was buried. Kearney would pick up his victims along the freeway as hitchhikers or at gay bars in either his Volkswagen or his truck. And almost as soon as they would enter into his car and he was alone with them, he would take his .22 caliber pistol and shoot them in the temple right above the ear for an instant death. Now, in most of his killings, he would take their bodies to secluded areas to engage in sexually violating acts with their bodies. Now, after finishing his deeds to his satisfactions, he usually mutilated and dismembered the remains with a hacksaw before disposing of their bodies in industrial trash bags in various locations, including canyons, freeways, and sometimes landfills if he knew that his disposal sites had too many people around them. Now, upon disposing of the bodies, he would actually scrub the bodies clean in hopes of eliminating any fingerprints he could have possibly left on them that were his. And then he became accustomed to disemboweling his victims so that the stench of death would not penetrate the noses of people in the surrounding area.
Sick.
Continuing his confession, Kearney mentioned he was fixated mostly on young men or boys, but a couple of his murders did include, as previously mentioned, a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old kid. His youngest victim was Ronald Dean Smith, that was from Lenox, California. He disappeared August 24th, 1974, and was never seen by family or loved ones again. Another child victim of Kearney's was 8-year-old Merle Hondo Chance. He lived in Venice, California, and went missing on April 6th, 1977. Kearney said he would notice Chance because he rode his bike quite often past his place of business. And on April 6th, Kearney suffocated Chance and took his body home with him that night. He later went on to dump his remains in the Angeles National Forest. So Chance's remains were then, of course, found on May 26, 1977, and it was documented that Chance was actually the last known victim of Kearney's. So since Kearney did enter into a plea deal and did not go to actual trial for the murders, he was charged with the 27 counts of murder and was given a life sentence for each of them. He did confess to a total of 28 murders, and police were certain he was responsible for the other seven, but in those cases, they lacked any physical evidence to really charge him with any actual murders of the young boys, which is just insane. Like I said, if a killer tell me he did it, I'm gonna believe he did it. So as of 2024, Patrick Kearney is 84 years old and currently incarcerated at the California's Mule Creek State Prison, where he will continue to stay to serve out his sentence. For today's episode, let's take a moment to remember the young men and their families who were brutally affected by Kearney's deranged actions, and their names will be in this next slide. And that concludes today's episode of the serial killer known in the USA as the Trash Bag Killer. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and turn on those post notifications. We'll see you next time for more Murder with Mo. My name is Mo, and I'm signing off the case today. Bye-bye.